Good afternoon and welcome to Talk of the Towns, where we try to go beyond the headlines to make sense of the issues facing Maine communities, to share what works, and to seek alternative solutions. Talk of the Towns has aired on WERU Community Radio since 1993, dedicated to the proposition that everyone benefits when we share our knowledge, our experience, our concerns, and our perspectives. We are about to practice the magic of community radio, in which those of us in our virtual studio and you who are listening create a dialogue that we hope will be of benefit to our friends, our neighbors, and colleagues. We are your hosts, Liz Graves, and co-hosts, and Ron Beard, hoping you'll stay with us for the next hour and Talk of the Towns. A reminder that we're recording this show in advance and won't be taking calls today. This afternoon, our topic is bed and breakfasts in Maine. We are in full swing in the summer season as we're recording, and one of the long traditions in the hospitality industry in Maine is family-run bed and breakfasts. Many folks have a dream of quitting their day jobs and running an inn, but what does it really take to make a go of one? So we're talking today with Terry Anderholm, author of Innmates, an innkeeper's memoir, and formerly of Bass Cottage Inn in Bar Harbor, Jim Hoffman of Peacock House in Lubeck, and Greg Suche of Craignair Inn and the Causeway Restaurant in Spruce Head. So welcome. Thank you so much for being here. I'm really excited. So what I'd like to do first is to just introduce ourselves to hear a little bit about how you got into this industry, this line of work, and a little bit about your inn, but we'll get more into that later. So mostly, who are you and how did you get going on this? So Jim, could we start with you?
Sure. Name's Jim Hoffman, and my wife and I, Mary Beth, run the Peacock House Bed and Breakfast in Lubeck. You want to know how we got into this venture? Well, originally it was Mary Beth's idea. She had been an occupational therapist for something like 30 years, and she was ready to retire from that. I kind of went along kicking and screaming at first, but melted right into it eventually. Took me
so
a while.
How long ago was this?
Let's see. That was about 2016.
Okay.
And this is our ninth.
Something like that.
Our ninth year. That's what we tell everybody anyway. Eventually got the hang of it. I'm an introvert, so that was like a stretch for me. But I'm a people person now, really, honest. Anyway, we run the bed and breakfast here. We do homemade breakfasts, local produce and all of that, you know. And it's we don't do a lot of things out of the can or any of that. It's homemade. And I take care of the juice and the opener, where we give like fruit or yogurt or something. And I do I'm like the sous chef. So if anything goes wrong, they sue me. little innkeeping joke there. Mary Beth does all the cooking of the main thing, the entree for the breakfast. We have no staff. It's just the two of us. So we clean all the rooms. And a lot of times it seems like you clean the room already, but no, that was the day before. Mm. So you're cycling around to the same rooms. We have seven guest rooms. We have four common rooms, and we have a newly built cottage out in the garden that people can hang out. And we've started serving breakfast out there too.
Nice. To Terry, and quickly, the Bass Cottage is in Bar Harbor, and you landed there from Boston. Is that right?
Right, Liz. So my husband, Jeff, and I, we both spent our summers as summer workers at inns and restaurants. And we thought when we got, midlife and career life had sort of worn a little thin, we thought, let's revert back and do something that used to be a lot of fun. And so we landed in Bar Harbor in 2003 and bought the inn, which was, a historic inn in the center of town, in need of a full renovation. And we thought, we can do this. And as we jumped in, we learned quite a few lessons about, you know, fate and about pulling that thread and watching the building, you know, in some cases come apart. But we put it all back together again and got it back in service by 2004.
Right. Very good. Greg, how'd you get mixed up in this?
I think it's probably a fairly common story. Kind of got a little tired of the corporate life.
Where were you? What were you doing?
We came via Boston. Okay. Lauren's background was in public health. My background was in commercial real estate management and high-end condominium management in downtown there. We've been here about 6 years now. We've got 21 rooms and a 95-seat restaurant as well.
That's just great. It seems like the spread of experience is great, and the geography is great. We're moving from Spruce Head to Lubeck. If each of you could kind of think about a working definition of inn versus bed and breakfast, what hotel versus motel. I mean, it's that kind of thing. What are we talking about? Each of you have described your operation, but do you have a working definition? Terry, what's your working definition of a B&B, for instance?
Well, I think a B&B tends to be, more of a property where, in this case, you know, perhaps the husband and wife or two people are able to run it without staff. At the Bass Cottage, we had a 10-room inn, and due to the offering that we had in place, I had a very, very nice breakfast service, 3 entrees every day. It was off the menu type, ordering guests were seated at tables for two. So by definition, I needed more servers. So we had 7 to 9 people on staff, including an assistant innkeeper who was sort of second shift individual. So I kind of think the bright line for me, B&B is a little bit more, you can kind of run it, you know, a little bit more easily. When you move into full service inn, now you're talking about more than just a bed and a breakfast. It usually has something to do with, you know, possibly having a wine service. In our case, we did have a restaurant for a short period of time, and we had a number of staff that helped us to run it very well.
So that's contrast to Jim and Mary Beth's operation. And Jim, you're doing this on your own.
That's right. We're a much smaller scale, but we really concentrate on the quality of the breakfast and the personal relationships that we make with people. And I think you see that in B&Bs as opposed to, say, motels, maybe. Not to knock motels, but right. I think we get a lot of repeat guests, for instance. So some of them have become friends, and we travel with some of them even in the off season. In Lubeck, at least, we have an off season. We didn't open this past winter. Other winters we did stay open, but you get very minimal business during the winter. So we like the idea of not being pressured 12 months a year.
Sure. And Greg,
you don't have a staff. Yeah. You know, that is the thing.
And Greg, you're operating both an inn and a very fine restaurant. Talk a little bit about that mix yourself.
Yeah. So I think, you know, as far as general industry kind of definitions, I've always felt that the inn is a full service inn with a full service restaurant versus just a breakfast service or just a small bar. So we do stay open year round, both the hotel and the restaurant. It wasn't necessarily deliberate, but we've kind of evolved into the different roles. Lauren's a little bit more of a morning person. So she's up early with the coffee and getting everything ready for breakfast service, where I'm up late with the restaurant, you know, closing out the restaurant, making sure everything's cleaned up, taking care of the guests. I cook breakfast a couple of mornings a week, but one of our cooks breakfast the rest of the week. We do made from scratch, locally sourced breakfast as well.
And staying with you, Greg, what's the mix of a combination in the Spruce Head area, and how does your operation fit into this larger mix? On one end might be bed and breakfast, and the other is a more hotel like or inn type operation.
Yeah, so we're just south of like Camden and Rockland, which you know, everybody coming up the coast keeps an eye on. So there's a couple of more hotel motel type places up right on Route 1 as you're coming through. There's maybe one other property similar to us on the St. George Peninsula, about the same size inn, a little bit smaller restaurant. They're more seasonal. They don't stay open year round. And then there's a couple of smaller just bed and breakfast in the Rockland area that don't do dinner service, that are just, you know, kind of a sleep and breakfast and then go explore type place.
And Terry, you've operated something in Bar Harbor, which has got a wide mix. How did your operation fit within the overall scale of things?
Well, Bar Harbor at one, you know, because of the national park, you know, the season May to, let's say, Halloween is really robust. I mean, you're full from the day you open till the day you close. As a result, you know, I did mention, and Jim was talking about, you know, B&B and perhaps being able to run it with two people. In Bar Harbor, because of the nature of the demand and occupancy, it's really hard, I think, to really try to run it single-handedly. That's also one of the blessings. The joke we used to make, May to October, every day feels like Monday. You're closed for this season. Every day feels like Saturday. And so it was definitely the case for us in Bar Harbor. And like Jim, we did try to see what we could do around holiday time. But it was like once the National Park closed for the season, it more or less Bar Harbor quieted down quite significantly as well. Mm.
You mentioned the national park there, and we have an international park near Lubeck, and it's the same situation where when they close for the season, most everything else closes around here too. Yeah.
And what's Lubeck like? Are you a typical overnight accommodation, or are there different scales in Lubeck in that area?
There are different. There is one other B&B. There are two that are something like B&Bs, more lodging places. Three, I should say, are like that. And there's a motel. There's a wide variety of things. There's an old Coast Guard station that's been turned into lodging. And if you go down closer to Cutler, there's even a lighthouse that's lodging. Mm. So there's a wide variety. Yeah.
I'll just remind listeners that they're tuned to Talk of the Towns this afternoon. We're talking with Terry Anderholm, who's the author of Inmates, an innkeeper's memoir, and formerly she owned and operated the Bass Cottage Inn in Bar Harbor. Jim Hoffman, representing he and his wife, Mary Beth, at the Peacock House in Lubeck, and Greg and Lauren Suche of the Craignair Inn in Spruce Head. Liz, the next question is to you.
Yeah. So let's see. Now, as often this point in the show, I have my plan and I have 10 new questions from what has been said. So curious for both Jim and Greg, when we get there, do you get a day off in the season at all?
Well, during the season, there are no days off. It's 7 days a week. And you lose track of what day it is, really. I don't even know what a weekend is, really. It could be just as any other day of the week, really. Yeah.
And while we're with you, the other thing I wanted to ask is about history of each of your properties. So was it already operating as a B&B when you came on scene? Because that's the other part of a definition of a B&B I think of is at one point in the past, it was somebody's private home.
Yes, as a matter of fact. And it's called the Peacock House because it was in the Peacock family for about 100 years, generations. And they sold it in 1987, and that's when it became a B&B. We are the third innkeepers here. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of history there because the Peacocks, they owned canneries, sardine canneries.
Oh, okay.
One of them was in Portland, which was supposedly the largest in the world at the time, and about five of them up here near Lubeck. And they were well known around town, and they knew all the politicians, Edmund Muskie and, you know, different people. Margaret Chase Smith, you know, used to stay here. And there's even one of our suites is called the Margaret Chase Smith Suite. It's kind of like, you know, Lincoln slept here, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Greg, what about you? Are you the, did you take over custody of Craignair from prior owners, or does anybody ever start from scratch?
So the inn here was originally built as a boarding house for a couple of nearby granite quarries. So the Craignair comes from, it's the name of a small Scottish town where several of the quarry workers came from in the early 1900s, 1920s. So it was when the quarries went out of business in the late 1930s, early 1940s, it was converted to a bed and breakfast in 1944 and has been operated in some form as a B&B and restaurant since that time. And we are the seventh owners.
So do you get days off?
That's funny. No.
I know. I should do. My friends who are in hospitality here would just smack me. Like, of course not. What are you talking about? What was my other question for you? Oh, it's about the restaurant. Well, the whole operation, but I'm thinking especially the restaurant. Does it make a difference? Do you think you get more local folks coming to the restaurant because you're able to stay open year round, that they have it in their head that, oh, yes, this is for us too?
We definitely do. When we first purchased the inn in 2018, there was only seven seasonal staff here. And now in the summer right now, we've got over 50 staff with seasonal employees, J1 students, and we keep about 20 to 25 staff on year round.
So say for folks not in the know, say what the J1 program is.
So J1 is an international student travel visa. So it's a 90-day visa for students that are traveling other around the country, and they're studying not hospitality, but they just want to get out of their home country and explore the U.S. a bit and work on their English skills, basically.
Cool. All right. So I'm going to turn to Terry next. Terry, we got the idea for the show when we heard about your book, Inmates, that just came out this year, last year.
It was published in February of 2024. So just this year.
Okay. So still new news. Mm-hmm. I still got the new on the label at the libraries. So you're a couple years out from having sold Bass Cottage Inn. What inspired you to write your stories down?
It started out, Inmates, an Innkeeper's Memoir, actually started out as a cookbook for inn guests. So I grew up in a restaurant business. And then at midlife, I went to culinary school in Cambridge, Mass, and worked in fine dining. And so when Jeff and I, moved up to Bar Harbor and took the inn on, the hospitality and the food and beverage side of the business were sort of, my forte. I really enjoyed cooking. I accumulated a number of menus and recipes I wanted to share. Guests wanted it. But then writing the book, it just shifted and went from being a book about food writing and food and beverage into something that was a little bit more personal. And I had studied creative writing as an undergrad at Boston College. I started keeping a journal, which really served me well as we were going through the inn renovation. And I had a lot of really wonderful material. With that in mind, I just, kind of sat down and 2022, I really, developed the manuscript, and then I got it published in 2024. And it's been a great summer of libraries and book festivals and, really getting to know my readers.
Yeah. So I'm hoping to ask you to read a little snippet, and I think maybe related was wondering about from your business life, from your prior business life, which of those skills served you best when you became an innkeeper?
I love this question, and I was often asked this at the inn, because I think a lot of people, like Greg said, a lot of people think, and Jim too, a lot of people think, I can do this. And yeah, you can do this. Whatever motivates a person to do it, though, will obviously be different. But, 99% of the guests are wonderful, just terrific. But there will always be a few who are troublemakers, and who knows why. We had guests who would break into the kitchen and steal bottles of wine. We would have guests who would become difficult with the staff. And, we would get to a point where if that happened in that 1% of cases, we would put that guest on a do not book list, basically a little, off to the side piece of paper or file in the computer where if the person wanted to rebook at the inn, we would likely say that we were unable to do that for them. But I think everybody has that experience with, you know, we'll say unique, complicated guests.
Yeah. Do you want to read the snippet now, Beth?
Sure. So we called our list the Do Not Book list, and we had a policy that I, you know, basically put together for purposes of the book. So the Do Not Book policy. Most innkeepers keep a list of the miserable minority of guests who've been bad actors while staying at the inn. It's called the Do Not Book list, a roster of shame. There are sections of the DNB list devoted to grumpy, implacable guests who enjoy nothing more than spending their money insulting innkeepers, fellow guests, and staff. Under the best circumstances, the innkeepers try to anticipate the grumpy guests before he or she enters the inn. But innkeepers are not savants, but there are times we are clairvoyant. If the assistant innkeeper speaks words like, "Roommate was difficult at check-in," the innkeeper will become vigilant and be on the lookout for guest bad behavior. If we agree the difficulties can't be resolved, we'll offer the grumpy guest alternative booking arrangements elsewhere, waiting for the right moment to inform them they're free to check out as soon as possible. So here are a few examples when this technique has been used. Guests confronting the innkeepers at breakfast, insisting their diets are so meticulous they need to cook their own food. Guests making rude, sexually explicit, or racist comments to other guests, staff, or innkeepers. Guests splashing bottles of wine on the draperies, carpeting, and bedding and not telling us. Guests sneaking guests into the room. Guests inviting guests from other inns to breakfast with them with no notice. Guests smuggling newborn twins because grandma canceled babysitting to go on a cruise. Guests bringing three service animals to the inn. Guests stealing bottles of wine from the inn's refrigerator, drinking it and passing out in the library. A wedding guest beating the front door with a rubber mallet. A guest insisting on a full refund despite not showing up for the booking. And guests having loud arguments in their room. Innkeeping, like life, is a journey, and no 2 days are the same. The guests come and go, and the parade of life's rich pageant is complex and endlessly fascinating. So it's important to keep the doorways, exits, and chimneys clear and unobstructed.
Thank you. I think my favorite is the rubber mallet. Bass Cottage has these beautiful, big, heavy doors, so it sounds like Martin Luther. That's awesome.
But Jim, you've had the opposite experience, and you've made friends with some of your guests, and as you mentioned, traveled with them. What do you suppose the special sauce is in making that kind of relationship possible?
Well, I don't know if it's a special sauce so much as just your garden variety ketchup and mustard, I guess. But you know, like just. We're friendly with everyone who walks in the door, and some people take to it and others don't, but eventually you click with some people and they come back year after year. So you refresh that relationship and eventually it gets into something, even a closer relationship down the road. But we don't really have a lot of rules for guests. You know, we have a few, but generally we veer away from putting a lot of signage out and, you know, saying, don't do this, do this. You know, we kind of keep everything pretty relaxed. And maybe that helps.
I'd like to build on Jim's point. One of the things we did at our inn is, you know, in order to really provide what we think guests do want, which is a personal experience to be recognized, is we had whiteboards and we would put the the check-in guest names and their room assignments in several locations so that we could actually refer to the guest by name and really develop that rapport. And it's true. I think people who stay at smaller properties like our inn, which was 10 rooms, Jim's, which is 7, they are looking for that personal interaction. And that is a huge part of the emotional gratification of the job.
Greg, what would you add to that conversation about how guests kind of show up and what do you do to make the best guests?
Probably a lot of the similar things, you know, just kind of keeping an eye on any details they might put in with the reservation. We always ask about dietary restrictions. We ask about any room preferences. We also try and be very diligent in our restaurant with similar things. Our restaurant reservation system allows us to keep notes. So we've got notes going back 4 or 5 years on, you know, where people moved up from, where they live, what they do for a living, you know, their spouse's name. So things like that, so that when we see they're coming in for the night or when they're calling to make a reservation, oh, I see you've got a gluten allergy. You know, our chef will be aware of that and you will have no problems finding something on the menu for you. You know, little things like that.
So it's kind of a record keeping above and beyond meeting someone and shaking their hand. You're trying to find out something about them so that you can be the greatest host in that regard. Yeah,
absolutely. And it's, you know, I'm not the best with names, so you know, seeing people a couple of times and making those notes really helps. And then you know, even something like the type of drink they generally like to drink, or you know, little things like that. Oh, are you going to have your Hendrix Martini tonight?
Do you have any favorite guests or stories that stick out of favorite connections with guests in your years so far?
And I've been told by a lot of guests that I've probably got one of the best bourbon selections in the state for my restaurant. So, you know, I love just sitting down and having a glass of whiskey or finding the right type of whiskey for my guests. I'm able to talk about some of the things they generally drink and generally like, or different flavor profiles that they prefer, and really kind of hone in and find something that they're going to love and, you know, enjoy paying, you know, a fair amount for. Got a lot of bottles that are very hard to find, one of a kind, very limited release, things like that. So giving people the opportunity to try something that they'll never get to try again or rarely ever, you know, is really always a fun connection for me.
So in addition to being welcoming them to your establishment, you're also welcoming them to the community. And so perhaps each of you could talk a little bit about how you make sure that people have a good stay in the community. Terry, could we start with you? You have one of the more complex communities to think about, I think.
I think that most innkeepers in Bar Harbor, and I would say, you know, all the company here on this radio program as well, we do consider ourselves community ambassadors, not only ambassadors for our property, because they're all unique, you know, in terms of, you know, how we approach the guest, and, you know, but the overall goal is to really to delight people and also to show them and to share with them, you know, the important areas in which they're visiting, which, you know, some people come to Maine every year, as Jim was saying, some people would stay every single year at the inn, and others would only be able to come perhaps to Acadia National Park once. And so you'd want to steer them in a direction so that they would have a good stay, because at the end of the day, they may forget what they had for breakfast, or they may not remember what they had for dinner, but the memories that they make on their trip will usually last quite a long time. And, you know, we really, I think of my colleagues in Bar Harbor, many of the innkeepers, we really felt that was a big part of the gratification of the job, was really delighting the guests and really sharing with them what we thought made our destination special.
Jim, you've mentioned some of the other features in Lübeck. Why do people make their way to Lübeck? What are some of the reasons they go?
Yeah, I wanted to insert too. I'm curious your perspective on whether what has changed in the last, say, 10 years. My sense is that Lübeck is a lot more popular and there's more folks going and maybe more options for eating and staying.
There's a lot of buzz around Lübeck in terms of people wanting to get further away from the crowds at Bar Harbor. So they start migrating north, and we're about as north as you can get on the coast. And easternmost too is the term everybody uses here, because we are the easternmost point in continental U.S. People come up here for all kinds of things, hiking. We have like over 30 hiking trails here, and a lot of coastal things, you know, out on the rocks and the cliffs. And so we're pointing them to the best hiking trail. Also, the International Park over on Campobello Island, we're four blocks away from the bridge to Campobello Island. So we usually have to give people a run through of how that works, going through customs and what they can expect over there. They are on the international time zone, so they're an hour ahead of us, even though they're right across the bridge. So that goofs up everybody's cell phones. Cell phones can't deal with that. And they'll flip back and forth. So, you know, we're telling people those kind of details, you know, and just trying to get people interested in the area that way, you know, just by knowing about all these different things.
Greg, what would you add to that in terms of helping guests orient to your region in the Mid-Coast?
Yeah, I think we, you know, I think all innkeepers probably are, like I said, ambassadors for the community. And so we really, you know, chat with our guests and see what they're interested in doing. Are they here to see some lighthouses? Are they here to see Camden National Park and do some hiking? Are they, Rockland's got some really great world-renowned museums. Are you here to see some of the Wyeth art? And kind of getting an idea of what type of experience they're looking for, and then using that to guide them to the resources around us.
I'm just going to remind listeners once again that they're tuned to Talk of the Towns. We're talking about Maine's bed and breakfasts, as well as inns and restaurants that are on a scale that people kind of associate with the coast of Maine. And we have guests in our virtual studio. You've just heard from Greg Suche of the Craignair Inn in Spruce Head. Jim Hoffman is with us at the Peacock House in Lubeck, and Terry Anderholm. And Terry used to own the Bass Harbor Cottage Inn in Bar Harbor, but she's also the author of a 2024 book called Inmates, an Innkeeper's Memoir. So I can imagine that some of the listeners to this show might be aspiring to own a bed and breakfast themselves or to operate one. What advice might you give someone who is considering that life change? Terry, could we start with you? You probably have some of this in your book, but what advice might you give to an aspiring innkeeper or bed and breakfast owner?
Well, I think that I would say, to certainly buy a building in good condition, a solid going concern, figure out maybe what you don't know so that you can prepare, so that you can think about, for example, if you don't feel that cooking is your forte, you should probably think about having those skills available for your business, either through hiring the staff or getting the skills or developing them yourselves. Innkeeping is a joy and it's a privilege. But I will say my book is a little tongue in cheek about some of the creative chaos that we experienced with our inn. And so with respect to that, I would say, just do as I say, but maybe not as I did. But I will say that after 15 years, Jeff Anderholm, my husband and I, we were really gratified by the fact that our inn was very well recognized in New England, Down East Magazine, Yankee Magazine, Boston Globe. But it took the whole team and us being fully committed to making that work every single day, both for new guests and more importantly, for the repeat guests, because they still expected a 5-star stay every time they were with us. And it was a privilege to figure out how to make that happen.
Mm. You mentioned that your first piece of advice was buy a building in good shape. Sounds like there's a story there, or maybe several. But tell us a little bit about your experience of having to rebuild the Bass Cottage Inn.
Well, the Bass Cottage Inn was built in 1885 by Mr. Higgins, and it was something of a rooming house for rusticators, which was sort of the nature of visitors to that part of Maine at the time, you know, late 1800s. Then a gentleman, Joseph Parker Bass from Bangor, Maine, he was a politician, a newspaper publisher. He bought it as a summer residence. And then it was converted to an inn sometime in the 30s. So when we, my husband Jeff and I bought the inn, it had been operating as an inn for 54 years. But it did need a little bit of polishing up, so to speak. And there were rumors that it was going to be torn down. And we, when we heard that, well, our underdog impulses compelled us. You know, we kind of knew what it felt like to be put out to pasture. And our, you know, our, you know, thought process was, we're going to save this building. And we did. And it's a magnificent building. But it did take a few chunks out of us. And, you know, it's lovely to be able to have saved a part of Bar Harbor architectural history. As you know, 1947, the fire of Bar Harbor really laid waste some of the beautiful architecture. And so those beautiful buildings that are still there are wonderful, and guests really enjoy being able to see them and, in fact, stay in a few of them.
Greg, what advice would you give aspiring inn owners?
Don't do it. mostly kidding. No, it's just however much work you think it's going to be a lot more. And just wrap your head around that. I mean, I worked 50 to 60 hours a week while also being a competitive runner, training 30 to 40 hours a week, and, you know, being involved in some organizations in Boston. And, you know, I thought we had a pretty busy life, and, you know, we understood how much work we were getting into, but it's still been considerably more.
But it sounds like there's some reward to that. You're willing to keep doing it, at least for now. What are some of those rewards?
Absolutely. Just, you know, being and integrating into the community for the town of St. George here. I'm the chair of our housing committee. I'm on our budget committee and comprehensive planning committees, and just kind of really enjoying the community that we live in. And, you know, I tell people, We bought this in based on 24 hours in the building and put in an offer the next day. But, you know, we knew that it had potential, and it, you know, at the time was turning a small profit. And we had no idea just kind of the supportive and wonderful community that we were getting into. Mm.
So it sounds like in some ways you were adopting a new kind of a new lifestyle in terms of your community sense that you might not have had in a larger city. That this notion that there is an actual community that is supporting you in your business venture. Is that fair?
I would say that's pretty accurate. Yes.
Yeah. Jim, how about your story? What would you add to the comments you've heard from both Greg and Terry in terms of advice you might give to an aspiring bed and breakfast owner?
Keep a good sleep schedule, because we get up at crack of dawn, and here, at least in Lubeck anyway, it's 4:30 in the morning, so it's very bright out at that point. And you have to really figure out your boundaries of just how much can you do in a day and still keep your sanity. But, and also you want to do what's really essential. And at some point during the day, you have to take some breaks. So I think there's just a lot of common sense things that you have to hold on to, just like you would in any other job. So that helps. It's rewarding. You get, when we took over the inn, you kind of gained a certain amount of gravitas amongst people in town. You know, you were the inn owner, you know, the Peacock House. So we cooperate with other lodging in the area. You know, if somebody gets overbooked, they'll call us, you know, and we pass guests around as if we were horse trading or something. I don't know. No, just joking, really. But anyway, it's rewarding. And I'd say to anybody, be really fully committed before you get into it. Like, just really do your research. And we did a lot of research, went to seminars about it and different things, you know, workshops just to to really know what was up with that whole business, because we came from disparate jobs, really. But one of the other things that's rewarding to me is that it's an old house and I get to fix it up and decorate it and such. I had a whole other career, one of my other careers, as a furniture restoration guy. So I had a shop there, down near Philadelphia. So I bring a lot of that with me, and I get a chance to fix things up here.
Mm. Each of you put on the training seminars that you attended. Mm-hmm. Where did you find those?
The actual B&B broker who sells B&Bs, I think they probably all of them do this, but they ran seminars trying to get people interested in buying B&Bs, but they are also like not pulling any punches. They tell you the truth about what it's like. So yeah, I guess they don't want any people coming back for a refund later or something.
Each of you, not on this particular radio show, have had partners as part of this. Talk a little bit about the partnership and the fact that you probably have to use different, each of you in the partnership have to bring different strengths to the operation. Terry, can we start with you and your husband, Jeff?
Sure. So my husband, Jeffrey Anderholm, was in the software business in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and then later in Boston. So he brought a skill set that really helped us out in terms of, and his forte was marketing and promotion. So he really helped us in building an online presence, making sure that our website was beautiful and highly functional, doing what Craig said, you know, allowing us to take notes about the guests and to be able to have that information for further stay. So Jeff was what I would call more of a front of the house manager. Because of my background, I was in the financial world in Boston. I did take a break and went to culinary school, as I mentioned. And so when I reverted back to, you know, working in the food and beverage industry, which, you know, I grew up in a restaurant family on both sides. Back of the house was a real comfort area for me. I knew how to write menus. I knew how to train cooks. I knew how to help servers, you know, delight the guests, how to teach people to wash their hands the right way, you know, all of those things. So between the two of us, we had front of the house, back of the house, pretty well staffed. And that allowed us to bring in other employees, usually student workers, who oftentimes were hospitality majors in their field of study, to come in. And, you know, we treated it like a business. We had policies and procedures. You know, we encouraged them to have fun, but also to understand that, you know, we did treat our inn like a business. And I think that made them very happy to be there. Plus, we offered housing, which thrilled them. So they could come to Bar Harbor, have a good living situation in a kind of family context. But then the work aspect was very professional and very friendly. And I think most people had a really good experience. Mm.
Greg, talk a little bit about your partnership with Lauren in operating Craignair Inn and the restaurant.
Yeah, kind of as I mentioned earlier, you know, we've kind of evolved into kind of the different roles to support our staff and to support the business. She is a little more introverted. So, you know, the morning people are a little quieter. She can set up. She likes to get up at, you know, 5:30 and do her, you know, kind of administrative, you know, computer work, and then start into the morning where, you know, checking in with guests and giving recommendations on things to do. And then, I've kind of managed the restaurant more so and do all of our inventory, all of our staffing, all of our scheduling, and mostly for the front of house. Our executive chef has been with us almost 2 years now, and he handles the scheduling and menu planning, and we kind of give him full rein back there. We trust him. He's a fantastic chef. So we've kind of taken the divide and conquer approach.
Right. And Jim, talk a little bit about your partnership with Mary Beth and how you operate. You've alluded to it, but tell us a little bit more if you would.
Sure. There's a division of labor and we will play to our strengths. I'm introverted. She is semi-introverted, but somehow we make this work. And she's really good at fielding phone calls and reservations and dealing with people at breakfast, going around to the tables and chatting with people. And I'm more like a one-liner guy, and then I'm off, you know, that kind of thing. But I do the bookkeeping, you know, the QuickBooks. And it's QuickBooks is not as easy as the commercials tell you. I found that out. But I do that, and she will, we clean rooms together, but we have specific jobs within those rooms. And then that's basically how we work it. And sometimes there's a cooperative effort on one thing if we need to. And if there's anything like when we built the garden cottage, well, I pretty much did that. It took me 2 months, but eventually it got done.
That's great. That's great. Again, I'll just remind listeners, you're tuned to Talk of the Towns this afternoon as we talk about Maine's bed and breakfast. You just heard from Jim Hoffman at the Peacock House in Lubeck. Greg Suche is with at the owner of the Craignair Inn with his wife, Lauren, and Terry Anderholm is also our guest. She and her husband, Jeffrey, owned the Bass Cottage Inn at Bar Harbor, and Terry has just recently written Inmates, an Innkeeper's Memoir, published this year. Liz, where would you like to take this conversation?
You just saw knowing nods all around the Zoom room when Jim mentioned QuickBooks. I have a friend who graduated with an MBA and started a business and then ran into the wall of QuickBooks, and she said, "They didn't teach us how to do this." I wanted to go back to Greg mentioned being part of and supported by and supportive of the local community there on Spruce Head. And I know you all specifically are also involved in the statewide business community and supporting other business owners and getting support that way. You got a Growth and Leadership Award from the State Office of Tourism this year. Tell us about your interaction with Hospitality Maine, which maybe one of you will remember not too long ago joined. It was two different organizations, the Maine Restaurant Association and the Maine, was it Innkeepers Association?
Innkeepers, yeah.
Something like that. So what do they do and how has that been part of your operation?
So we've been fortunate the last few years as we've grown and taken on some new things to be recognized by some really cool organizations. The Penobscot Bay Chamber here recognized us as a Small Business of the Year back in 21. Cool. We did win the Hospitality Maine's Innkeepers of the Year in 22. In addition to the Growth and Leadership Award from the Maine Office of Tourism,
What were those new efforts? What was the growth?
Yeah, so we, as I mentioned, growing our staff from seven seasonal staff up to 50 in peak season. A couple years ago, we added a new community art gallery in part of the room. So we were actually where I'm sitting. We were very deliberate and consulted with a couple of local artists on lighting and hanging and design of the space. So it's, you know, a lot of inns and a lot of restaurants have art hanging in the space. But we were very deliberate about creating an art gallery that you can have dinner in and relax in and sit by the fireplace. And then we've created a micro massage studio in one of the rooms in the inn here. So she's been really high in demand and very well received in the community. There's a high demand around here for that. I am chair of the Penobscot Bay Chamber's Housing Committee. Our advocacy committee, and then Lawrence on the Maine Women's Network. So as we've grown and been able to have some supportive staff, we've been able to step back a little bit from the day-to-day of actually operating the inn and been able to be a part of the community a little better. We have been recognized for some of our green initiatives. We've got 50 solar panels on the roof with 4 Tesla batteries that allow us to not only in power outages, but allow us to adjust our demand based on when the load is greatest on the power grid. We recently were awarded the Community Block Grant for creating a new full-time local position for a marketing director. So instead of outsourcing all of our marketing to out-of-state firms. We've brought that position in-house, creating another local job in the community. So just kind of things like that, being a part of the community and really trying to grow and do what we can to support the area we live in.
I'm really glad hearing all of that, that you get to go running, that you have a hobby that breaks up all those meetings. That seems like a good combination.
How about Terry, did you kind of aspire to kind of, were you part of the Chamber of Commerce in Bar Harbor? Were there ways in which you kind of related to the larger industry in your field?
We spoke earlier about, the separation of, within our inn and who did what. So my husband, Jeff, was very active with the Bar Harbor Chamber of Commerce on the marketing committee and that type of thing. So usually we would have at least one person involved in chamber business. Bar Harbor is, as you probably know, a pretty robust business community. And we were, rather small, husband and wife operator of a small inn. But we did find that involvement with the community, both getting to know local restaurateurs and, being able to kind of play an informal public relations role was a really nice thing to be able to do. Shops and shopkeepers as well, being connected with the Chamber of Commerce, and then working closely with Hospitality Maine and organizations like that to, really further, I think, the good work they were doing to get the word out about inns and B&Bs in Maine. And, we live in this iconic state. People come here from all around the world, and we have so much to impress and delight people that it takes more than, just folks in their own backyard. It's, that community of people spreading the word and working on promotion and public relations. And so, yeah, it made for a very busy time. And to tell you the truth, my writing the book seems to have attracted people who seem to think that this is something they may want to do in their future careers. So, I still feel like I'm kind of doing my part to get the word out there that innkeeping can be a tremendous career opportunity for the right people who have a real feel for, I think, service, for who come from caring professions, teaching, nursing, business, like myself and like Greg. You bring all those skills to whatever you're doing. And innkeeping is a really very involved, very engaging, and a very active people business.
And how about you, Jim? You've mentioned some of the collaboration you have with other innkeepers and other businesses. Talk a little bit about the business community in the Lubeck area.
It's very laid back, very relaxed. We don't have a lot of high rollers in this area. It's very rural up here. And but we stay in touch with everybody in the community and actually take part in things. Mary Beth was on the library board for several years. I do a radio show at the community radio station up here. I worked with the Conservancy, went out painting the trees blue, that kind of thing. We stay in touch with everybody here. We put up a little library out in front of the inn. There's a couple others in town, too, that we coordinated with the public library here. We have a really good library in Lubeck.
Great. Well, the last question is really what, and you've told so many great stories, what do you wish our listening public would know, or the public at large would know about inns and innkeeping that perhaps they don't know? Do they have some myths that you'd like to kind of explode a little bit? What do you wish our listeners would know about innkeeping? Can we start with you, Terry? You've given some thought to this in your book, I'm sure. But yeah.
Well, I'll just say something that I think really occurs to me, and through this wonderful conversation we've had today, is that people come to this. And once you've made a commitment to the business, you know, it really does take a lot of, you know, sincerity to really make that connection with the public. And so at times when it does get a little rocky, you know, everybody's bringing their story to your inn. You know, they may be celebrating a vacation, an anniversary, a birthday, but some people are carrying some very difficult things with them as well. And it's having the sensitivity to, as an innkeeper, to kind of read those situations and to, you know, respond accordingly. And so at our inn, you know, we were always, you know, very friendly, but also honoring a little bit of space, because until you get to know that guest, you don't really know them that well. And there are so many humorous stories in the book about guests. So I'll just leave it there and hope folks will have a great summer and maybe pick up my book while they're reading.
Jim, what would you hope that people might know about innkeeping that they don't know?
Well, I think it's pretty much what was just mentioned. I think you don't really know what other people are going through. So you have to have a certain amount of patience and understanding. And that's kind of it. You have to turn yourself into a people person, even if you aren't to start with. Case in point here.
Well, and it sounds like each of you are trying to figure out a way to make it feel like home, a safe place for people to be. And that is perhaps different than, you know, a large hotel.
Our guests, you know, we get so many repeat guests. They will bring us gifts when they come.
Sure. Greg, what would you add to that? We've got just a minute left. Greg, what would you add to that notion of what you hope people might know about innkeeping that they don't know?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things, we were actually looking around properties in New England for about a year and a half to 2 years. And we kind of during that process, again, coming from the property management background, nobody picks up the phone and calls you when the guys do a nice job on the lawn. Or the snow gets shoveled or the carpets get cleaned. It's always something's broken, something's wrong, or complaining about something. So, you know, over a decade in that industry really wore on me. So we were traveling and stayed in this, little like 4 or 5 room B&B on the western coast of Scotland. And this woman, we were just having breakfast with these other guests and she had kind of mentioned that it was really interesting and kind of a nice change of pace for her as well, because people who are coming there are on vacation. And yeah, 99% of the people are in a good mood and they're on vacation and they're having fun. You get a, you know, get a couple of, like Terry said, you know, outliers, but yeah. So it was really interesting to kind of think about that perspective of it.
Well, thank you all. We've come to the end of an hour. It's a very short hour. Be sure and join us from 4 to 5 on the second Wednesday afternoon of each month for Talk of the Towns. Podcasts of our programs can be found in the archive section of the WERU website. If you have comments or suggestions for topics for our programs, please email us news@werU.org. Our theme music is a medley from Karnak on a Balnane House Highland Music recording. Thanks again to our guests this afternoon, Terry Anderholm, who's author of Inmates, an Innkeeper's Memoir, and formerly co-owner with her husband of Bass Cottage Inn in Bar Harbor. And Jim Hoffman was with us from Peacock House, where he and his wife, Mary Beth, are the owners of Peacock House. And Greg Suche was with the Craignair Inn, and he operates that with his wife, Lauren. Thanks so much to our underwriters. Thanks to Joel Mann for helping to engineer our program. And stay tuned for Ralph Nader Radio from 5 to 6 and The Groove Shop from 6 to 8. Liz Graves and I are producers and hosts for the Talk of the Towns. This is Ron Beard wishing you a good afternoon.